And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
This is the Athletic Hockey Show.
It is a Thursday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. It is Ian Mendes, Sean McAdoo with you. Ahead on the pod, Jesse Granger going to drop by. He's going to, we're going to give him the platform to geek out about goalie gear. We got a ton of emails. Ton of listener feedback, voicemail, all that stuff to get to. There's just so much going on here, Sean, in the hockey world. But I got to ask you this, because on Wednesday night, Connor McDavid gets to 60 goals. And I oddly kind of feel like this was quiet. Like last year, when Austin Matthews was closing in on 60, I felt like every night the guy was at 56, 57. Is he going to get to 60? And I felt like everybody was paying attention. Will he get it? And, what's it going to be like? And I feel like McDavid got to 60 and was just kind of like, oh, yeah, by the way, Connor McDavid got to 60. Like, was there no buzz here? What happened?
That a Toronto Maple Leaf got more attention than was warranted. Here's the thing. With Austin Matthews, I feel like the reason it got attention was because it was coming down to the wire. And there was this question of, was he going to do it? Can he get to 60? Connor McDavid, it feels like he's at 60 in the bank since November. It's with him, it might be 70 that we get to where we're counting down, and that'll be the big deal. But I mean, he's got 10 games left. Who knows what this guy's going to do? It's been fantastic to watch. And look, I mean, we called it at the beginning of the season, right? Like we're not right about a ton of things, but we told you at the beginning of the year when we had Granger on and we were talking about who's going to win the goal scoring title. And we said, Connor McDavid has had to listen to everyone talk about how great Austin Matthews is all summer. And he might just go psycho mode on the league. And it's playing out, and it's amazing to watch. And now it's, 70 goals, 150 points. I mean, this guy's putting up Bernie Nichols numbers. That's pretty impressive.
he's going full Bernie Nichols.
Full Bernie. You never go full Bernie, but he's doing it. And how great was that overtime goal, right? Because he gets it. People didn't see it. He gets a breakaway. This beautiful pass from Leander Seidel. He goes in on the breakaway, and he doesn't score, which is, shocking on its own. And as the play is going on, smashes his stick into the boards. And then immediately gets the puck back, goes in, does pretty much the same move. Like, you knew the second one was going in. Like, this is what happens when normally when a guy is this great, you say, like, don't tick him off. But, I mean, I don't know what you know, stopping him on a breakaway ticks him off. You knew the second one was going in, or else that stick was probably getting launched into outer space.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable to me. Like the seven, like just for context for the listeners, you know, Ovechkin's never gotten to 60, and some people will argue he might be in the conversation Ovechkin for the greatest goal.
Ovechkin got there once. He got to 65.
No, I'm saying not to 70. I'm talking 70.
70, yeah. 70. No, like, didn't get close. Yeah.
No, like you said, I think we need to be talking about 70 in McDavid. And yep. And just to give the listeners context, Ovechkin's never gotten to 70. Mike Bossy never got to 70. And those are two players who a lot of people would say arguably are the best snipers in the history of the game. You know, Gretzky's obviously in there, Hall's in there.
A lot of people will say Mike Bossy's the best goal scorer ever, and he didn't get to 70 playing on a dynasty in the 80s.
Yes. This is what I'm saying. I think McDavid, if he can get to 70 this year, I think it should be viewed in the same way as, you know, Mario got to 85, Hall got to 86. Like, I think it's that good. Like, I think it's in that stratosphere of how impressive it is.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. And look, I mean, Mario got to 85 once. He had one other year where he got 70 on the nose. This is Mario Lemieux. This is the most unstoppable force playing in the highest scoring era of all time, and McDavid's in there. It's going to be fascinating to see. I really like the adjusted era stats where you can sort of measure based on how many goals are being scored, and you sort of play them out that way. This might end up being one of the great offensive seasons of all time once you once you sort through it, because I mean, yeah, scoring's up a little bit this year. It's up a little bit. It's not so much that we're anywhere close to what we had in the 80s or the early 90s. You know, Brett Hull had that great run where he was 70, I think, 3 years in a row. Phenomenal. Brett Hull is should be right up there with Mike Bossy and those guys among the all-time great goal scorers. But to do it like this and to do it as a center, as well is just another thing when you're setting up so many goals. And look, it's doing it with Zach Hyman as your like play driver on your line. It's amazing. And we should just, I don't know what you can do other than just sit back and kind of shake your head, and everybody should be watching this and loving this, except whoever plays the Oilers in the first round of the playoffs, because good luck with that.
Yeah. And, on the night where McDavid gets to 60 and, as you said, does it in kind of, spectacular fashion, there's Sidney Crosby in Denver. Another 30-goal campaign for him. Penguins move into the second wildcard spot. Crosby, by the way, that goal was classic Crosby.
Backhand.
Just
sick.
Unstoppable backhand. It's just, I'm getting so entertained by Josh Yowie and Rob Rossi, who cover the Penguins for us. What kind of whiplash roller coaster is it for these guys?
Gentilly,
five good
too.
Games.
Gentilly's four bad been games. Shoveling dirt on these guys.
I would have figured Pittsburgh goes into Denver. They've lost four in a row. The Avs are rolling. You would think this a recipe for disaster. Instead, Pittsburgh wins 5-2. They reclaim the final wild card spot in the East. And look, 2 weeks ago, it felt like legitimately it was a 5 or 6 team race in the East. But Ottawa has faded. Washington has faded. Detroit and Buffalo have faded. So now, Sean, we're down to 3. I think it's fair to say we're down to 3. It's Pittsburgh, yep. Florida, and the Islanders. Of those 3, it feels like a little bit of a flip of the coin. But who do you like to make the playoffs amongst the Penguins, the Islanders, and the Panthers?
I've been saying ever since we had that group of 5, I've been saying I think the Panthers make it. I think there's too much talent there. I think certainly, the issue is that the blue line is thin. Yes, the goaltending is not great. Still don't love the coaching change they made, but I just think there's too much there. Up until last night, I would have said Florida and New York. The Islanders are chugging along. They absolutely ran over the Leafs a couple of nights ago, and Pittsburgh have been collapsing. But the thing with the Penguins is they've been so all over the map all year. Like I've had this running joke in my weekly column where I can't figure out the Penguins, because just when you say All right, they've lost 4 or 5 in a row. Write them off. The window has slammed shut. This is not a good team. Then they roll off a win streak. You know, they had the 8 wins in a row or whatever it was earlier in the year, and then it just flips the other way. And it's been fascinating because if you didn't ever look at the standings and all you did was read the coverage of a team, especially around the trade deadline, everybody wants Ron Hextall fired. Nobody likes what's going on there as far as the moves they made at the deadline. It feels like there's disconnect between the GM and the coach and everything. I mean, you'd be convinced that the Penguins were a dumpster fire. And yet then you look at the standings and they're sitting right there. I wouldn't say comfortably in a playoff spot, but they've been holding down that wildcard spot the whole way. And the one thing I would say is, and you got a little glimpse of it last night, if we talked about Connor McDavid going psycho mode, Sidney Crosby at his age doesn't have that level in him anymore. But if Sidney Crosby just decides, you know what, I've been in the playoffs 16 years in a row. I'm not ending the streak this year. I'm not letting the Florida Panthers and New York Islanders knock me out of a playoff spot. I will drag this team to whatever they need to get to at the finish line. That's what scares me a little bit if I'm an Islanders fan. But look, I mean, from an entertainment standpoint, we all want the high power, the star power Panthers, last year's President's Trophy winner, plus Sidney Crosby, you want him in the playoffs. And, here's the Islanders, and they're kind of old, and, maybe they're a little boring. They don't have Barzell, and, but the Islanders are chugging along. And, they look like a playoff team, absolutely, right now. And they've certainly got the best goaltending out of that group. But let's wait and see. I think the Panthers get one of them, so it's which one of the two old Patrick mainstays can grab the other one.
You know what's interesting? And you mentioned those three teams. And I think if any of them, whoever makes the playoffs, they're going to be a tough out in round one because, the Panthers are, I know that they had a lot of change in the offseason, but the core of a defending President's Trophy winning team is still there. As you mentioned, the Penguins are the Penguins. Sid is there. Gino is there. Letang is there. The Islanders might have the best goalie out of that group and certainly one of the better goalies in the entire league in Sorokin. Mm-hmm. So I think they're going to be a tough out. But when I look at the Western Conference, this is what I want to ask you. Now let's look at the Western Conference wildcard teams, because I think in the East, if Pittsburgh or the Islanders or Florida pulled off a first round upset, it'd be an upset, but it wouldn't be like the biggest shock of all time. I wonder though, do you have any faith that a Western Conference wildcard team, and right now it's Seattle or Winnipeg, you have any faith in either of them doing the same thing, or are they going to be like one and done? Because it just, Winnipeg is just falling off a cliff, and the Kraken have kind of evened out a little bit. I think they're still 6-3 or something in their last 9, but they, I don't know. They just don't seem to be as dominant as Vegas and LA lately. And so I wonder, do you think you have any faith in the Kraken or the Jets making some noise in the playoffs?
The Kraken are a tough one because you remember in January when they went into Boston and they shut out the Bruins, and it was the first regulation loss that the Bruins had all season on home ice. And it felt like that was the moment where Seattle had been very good in the first half. They surprised us all. They were right in the mix. But that felt like the moment where they were planting their flag saying, we are for real. We just did what nobody else in this league could do. We went into Boston, beat them, shut them out on their own ice. It's time to start taking the Kraken seriously. And I did. I wrote the piece in the wake of that game saying, we got to really start taking this team seriously. And then ever since then, they have just been sputtering along. Basically a 500 team. Not bad. Haven't fallen off a cliff. Haven't been terrible. But they haven't looked at all like a team that is going to scare anyone. And, you hate to say it. And I know this isn't really the way that anybody in the NHL thinks, but look, Seattle, it's their second year in the league. Last year, they were not good. This year on paper, a lot of us looked at this team and said, this is going to be a team that's in the Connor Bedard mix. And instead they've surprised us all. They've been holding down a playoff spot. You hate to say it, but they do give off the vibe of a team that maybe is going to be just happy to be there, where they get into the playoffs. That's a victory. You get at least 2 playoff games in Seattle. It'll be a great atmosphere. Building will be loud. Their fans get their first taste of playoff hockey. And that if that's as far as it goes, it's a win. It's, you know, it'll be a victory for that franchise. But I just have a hard time seeing it going any further. Now, same thing with Calgary, if they can get back into it. Same thing with Nashville, who are, you know, despite selling at the deadline, basically throwing in the towel, are right there. They don't really scare me. The one team is Winnipeg. And partly because we saw in the first half, I mean, there were times where they were starting to drift into that legitimate contender conversation. We know all the talent they have up front. And the difference, those four teams, is the goaltending. They have Connor Hellebuyck. They have one of the best goaltenders in the world, period. I don't want to be going into a playoff series knowing that Connor Hellebuyck is sitting across there, especially as a wild card. I mean, if you know, does Winnipeg match up well with Vegas or even LA? Yeah, you know, maybe not. How about Connor Hellebuyck against Jonathan Quick or whoever the Knights have? That doesn't, that suddenly makes me feel like Winnipeg's got a shot at this. Same with LA. You know, same with really almost all the teams in the conference, other than probably Dallas with Jake Oettinger. And even there, I mean, you got a young kid. We haven't seen a ton of him in the playoffs. He's been phenomenal what we have seen, but you know, who knows? That's the one kind of trump card that Winnipeg maybe has in their back pocket. That's the one team that I would point to and say, don't count them out just because they make the playoffs. And let's also remember, you're talking the wild card spots. I mean, you get in the wild card in the East, you got to go through Boston, maybe Carolina, two of the best teams in the league all year long, built for the long haul. You know, in the West, who knows who you're going to play? It's to pull off an upset in the West, it's not going to be as big an upset as it would be in the East, because the conference itself is not as top heavy as the Eastern Conference is.
And speaking of which, you know, one other team I want to hit on here, and they were kind of in the wild card conversation until they're not, and that is the LA Kings, and that they've put themselves into the, hey, we can win the division conversation. Forget about sneaking in as a wild card. I mean, they haven't lost in regulation time this month. I think there's something like 8-0-2. They're on quite a heater. And look, they made some significant changes. You mentioned Jonathan Quick. Like they rolled the dice. They had to trade out an iconic player in franchise history because they thought this is the right thing to do. Jonas Korpisalo's come in, Sean, 920 save percentage, .196 goals against average, 3-0-1. Like he's been clicking. Like, I don't know. Like as much as we talk about Vegas and Edmonton, I kind of feel like we need to put LA on the same level as those two teams, because I kind of feel like that Pacific Division is it's a toss-up, and LA deserves a seat at that table.
The standings say that you're absolutely right. And yet it feels like this team has flown under the radar.
Yeah.
I guarantee you there are Kings fans right now going, guys, shut up. We're happy to fly under the radar. At this point, that's our identity. You Eastern media types, you don't get to jump on the bandwagon now. You've been ignoring us all year long. I think the best explanation, because I've wrestled with this, like why the Kings are a great story and it's a big market. It's, you know, why do we just go right to Vegas and, you know, these other teams? And you know, why don't the Kings seem to resonate with us for what they're doing? And the best I can come up with is I feel like as hockey fans, hockey media, there's two scenarios that we like in a rebuild. We like the slow and steady, slow progress type of rebuild where, you know, you're bad for a few years and then you break through, you make the playoffs. And then the year after that, maybe you win a round as an underdog, and then you win maybe two rounds and you just slowly take the steps. Or we like the fast forward. We can get our heads around that too, where a team just seems to hyper speed jump ahead. Like what the Devils, you know, you could argue have done this year, where their record last year was terrible and suddenly, boom, they're right there at the elite. We like that too. What we don't necessarily appreciate is a team that's a little bit in the middle, where the Kings they did the traditional rebuild. They did not the full-scale teardown, because they kept, you know, a lot of the key veterans, but, you know, they moved guys out. They focused on the draft. They focused on bringing in some young guys. Then they got good, surprised a lot of us by making the playoffs last year. And now, after having done that, you know, they're not doing slow and steady, but they're also not dominating the league. And they're sort of right in the middle there. And maybe we just, you know, our hockey fan brains just, you know, that's not an easy story for us to jump on. So we kind of don't give it enough credit. But this is a really good team. And they've had the results all year long. This isn't one, I mean, you mentioned 8-0-2 in their last 10. Yeah. But this isn't a team that was just sputtering along and then they have that 10 game hot streak and then the hot streak goes away and they go back to what they were. These guys have been good all year long and certainly a very, very winnable division. Let's just say that in the Pacific. And then, hey, if you win a division, you can say, oh, it's the Pacific's the weak division. Okay. You get to the Final Four, you've absolutely got a shot at this. And,
yeah.
And we know, hey, the Kings, they didn't trade some of those veterans. So they've got, you know, Kopitar, Doughty, guys who have won cups as an 8 seed in 2012, remember, as another team that a lot of us weren't taking seriously enough. Who knows? Who knows where these guys can go?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. When you're trying to grow a business, the caliber of person you bring in to help you do that is really important. And LinkedIn makes it really easy to interview the right people for the role, quality people. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/NHL show. That's linkedin.com/NHL show to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
It's a Thursday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show, which means our pal Jesse Granger drops by for Granger Things, brought to you by BetMGM, the exclusive betting partner with the Athletic. And we're going to get into some fun stuff here, Jesse, with your favorite topic, your favorite position in hockey. It's the crease. It's goaltending. And you had a chance to sit down and pick the brain of a handful of elite goalies in the NHL and just sit down and chat with them about their gear and in particular about pads. Because I think the hockey nerds and the goalie nerds are really going to enjoy this piece that you have up today, right?
Yes, it is a very niche piece, but the goalies do love their gear, and I found out they actually love it more than I thought they did going in. I was kind of like, I know that just me and goalies that I know, we love our gear, so I wanted to kind of get into the NHL guys' heads and talk. And I know most of them like the gear just because the guys I cover in Vegas, I always end up talking about it with them in the locker room, but I got to talk to Andre Vasilevsky, Linus Ullmark, Connor Hellebuck, UC Saros, and Ilya Sorokin, and a few other guys, and they absolutely love talking about their gear. The press conference for the All-Star game was like on the beach, and they're on these podiums, and there's like 40 people yelling questions at them, and every time I would get in a question about gear, it was like the goalie would just stop everything and just sit there and talk. Like even Vasilevsky even like realized his answer was going on too long. Another guy kind of jumped in and asked a question. He came up to me in the locker room after and was like, "Hey, you want to keep talking about that?" because we didn't really have time to do it at the press conference. So yeah, these guys love their gear. It's fascinating to me how many goalies actually started playing the position because they liked the pads so much. Like UC Saros told me, I played all kinds of sports growing up, but not hockey. And then once I first got into hockey, the first thing I saw was, wow, that goalie, he's got all the cool gear on. I want to do that. And most of the time, their parents regret it because it is incredibly expensive. But yeah, Sorokin also started playing goalie because of the pads. And just lots of fascinating little tidbits I was able to get about how they choose the pads they wear, why they choose the pads they wear. One of the interesting things is, so the companies, Bauer, CCM, True, Vaughn, they have representatives that go around the league and obviously try to convince goalies. They're kind of lobbyists. They convince goalies to wear their gear. But once a goalie chooses to wear a certain company's gear, he gets a rep. So you're a rookie. Most of the time, you're not even in the NHL yet. You pick CCM or you pick Bauer, and now Bauer assigns you a rep. And that rep stays with that goalie for the rest of his entire NHL career. So like CCM and Vaughn and all these companies, they work with teams for the skaters. If you're a skater, you ask for a stick, the representative is assigned to your team. But with goalies, they actually have their own rep that stays with them. Even if you get traded to another team, your rep stays with you. And it's like a personal one-on-one connection with this guy. And that way you can give them feedback in terms of obviously the aesthetics, what color you want them, what designs you want them. But also more than that, tiny little tweaks. I want this strap down here. I want this one tighter. I'd like the leg channel to sit at this different angle. I'd like the knee block that I land on to be a little higher up. Just tiny little tweaks that you'd obviously never see from the outside, but to give them little advantages, it's just fascinating how much influence the actual goalies in the NHL have on what the pads are, how the pads are made, how they're designed, how they function. And those companies are obviously more than willing to do whatever they can to get those goalies to wear them because it's a giant billboard. I don't know how many people are using CCM gloves because Connor McDavid wears them, but I do know that there are thousands of goalies that wear the pads they wear because their favorite goalie wears that brand of pads. So it's just a giant billboard on the ice.
Jesse, you're talking to all these goalies. You yourself, people who listen to the show know, you're a goaltender. Our producer on the show is a goaltender. For those of us who are normal people.
Yes.
explain to us how, like, other than the equipment being ridiculously and comically and unnecessarily large, like, what are some specific things that, you know, I look at a goaltender, I see big leg pads, I see the blocker, I see the trapper, but, you know, what are some things that I would not even think to look for that to one of you weirdos is important enough that it's got to be just absolutely perfect?
I mean, there's a lot. I'm trying to think of something specific. So like, there are breaks in pads, and this is something that you've probably never even noticed, but in the goalie pad, if you look to the outside of it, there some of them have no breaks, and that's a really stiff pad that gives really big rebounds, and some goalies want their rebounds really popping off their pads, and basically there's no bend in that pad. If you look at it from where it, well, obviously there's a bend where the foot is, but then from that ankle all the way up to the very top, the thigh rise, it's just stiff with no bends. Then you've got some pads with one break, you've got some pads with two breaks, and the more breaks you have, usually the softer the pad is. If you look at a guy like Jonathan Quick, he's kind of old school, and his pads have a lot of break in them, and they're really curved around his knee. So when he kind of gets in that crouching position, his pads are really curved. And those pads don't have, compare him to Andre Vasilevsky. If you were to look at Jonathan Quick and Andre Vasilevsky's leg pads right next to each other, they are drastically different. Quicks are a lot more curved. They're a lot softer. They've got a lot more like cushion to them, sort of. And then Vasilevsky's are basically a piece of plastic. Like everything's popping off those pads massively quick. So something like that is very, very different. A lot of the other things are the stuff you really can't see. Like you'd never know without talking to a goalie. Like I mentioned the leg channels and the knee boards, or sorry, the knee blocks. Those are the pieces inside the leg pad that hold the leg in, and the way they're constructed, and the, not even just like how tight you put it, but the actual angle. Connor Hellebuck was fascinating because he told me when he was 17, senior in high school, he started wearing some Reebok Revoke pads, and he literally credited these pads and the way the leg channel sits and the way the gloves sit on his hand with helping him form his techniques that became his techniques as an NHL goalie. And the company that was designing Reebok's pads at the time, it's this family named Lefebvre, and they're probably like the royal family of goalie pads. They moved on to CCM. When they went from Reebok to CCM, Hellebuyck went along with them to CCM. Then a couple years ago, they went from CCM to TRU. Hellebuyck went from CCM to TRU. And he told me, he's like, I will wear whatever pads Lefebvre designs for the rest of my life, because he literally credits his techniques as a goalie with the way these pads sit on his legs and hands. It's pretty fascinating. Like, Lefebvre is such a big name in goalie pads. If you look around the league, TRU has the most goalies of any company right now. I think it's over 50. So there are 37 goalies wearing TRU. The next closest is Bauer with 19. And 5 years ago, TRU didn't exist. I mean, there was not one goalie wearing TRU. And it's all because that Lefebvre family that's been making them forever, they made Patrick Waugh's pads back when they were Coho. There are a lot of goalies that really like the way they make pads. So whatever company they move to, all the goalies kind of follow.
You know, one thing I've always wondered with goalie pads too, like, you know, goalies take so much time designing their masks and having their personal stamp on the mask. The pads are a little bit different. The story I always remember was, so Marc-Andre Fleury, in the early kind of part of his time in Pittsburgh, Marc-Andre used to wear bright yellow pads. And people may remember this, bright yellow pads. And there was, the reason why he switched is there was a story, and it was done by an Ottawa reporter. It was a newspaper in the Ottawa Citizen at the time when Ottawa was playing Pittsburgh in a playoff series. They actually interviewed an eye doctor. Okay. This is going to sound weird, but the eye doctor said, you know, for a shooter, it's easier to score on a goalie who's wearing bright pads because your eye can detect, the open parts of the net easier when he sees the yellow pads. And so I've always thought, like, it's interesting when, like, people think, like, oh, how come they don't have more, like, a different look in their pads or a little bit more color or pop? But this eye doctor said years ago, if you have super colorful pads and they're bright or whatever, it actually helps the shooter because they can see the net easier. And I was blown away by that. I had never thought about that at any point.
Yeah, I remember when Fleury here in Vegas, when he went to his gold pads, I remember asking him about that. I asked him, like, didn't you switch away from the yellow ones because they were, like, you heard that they could? And he was like, yeah, I used to believe that, but I don't anymore.
Oh, he doesn't.
I mean, he won Vezina in his gold metallic pads that you can see from space. So they obviously, the shooters weren't finding the holes too easily. But it's fascinating. You know, Patrick Waugh used to have his pads where just on the thigh rises near the top, right where the butterfly, like when you go into the butterfly, right where the pads connect in the middle, he had little white spots kind of on the bottom of them. And this may be like an old, like, wives' tale, but I'm pretty sure it was to make shooters think that there was a spot between there to shoot five hole. Mm-hmm. And then it would just hit the white of the padding. If there's any goalie out there that's crazy enough to do that, it's 100% Patrick Waugh. So that's probably why I believe the story.
Was there not, help me remember this, because years ago, I remember seeing goalies' leg pads that they designed in basically white with red, basically red netting. They designed the pads to look like the back of the net. And I feel like that was, you know, I was just looking. You can find pictures of these pads, and we haven't seen them. And I feel like there was maybe a rule passed or something, because that would be, you know, fantastic. You want the shooter to turn around. A lot of times they don't have a lot of time to get a look. They just have to kind of instinctively figure out, where's the spot I can shoot at. If you can trick them into thinking the whole bottom of the net's there, that takes away some of that. But I don't remember. Do you guys, either of you remember, like, did we pass a rule? Was there some reason why we can't do that?
I'm not sure. I'll have to look into it. I will say the only time I've ever seen those pads is, like, beer league guys. It's just amateur goalies. Like, I don't know I'll have to look that up. That's fascinating.
That I remember, and you know, this gets into what Ian was saying, and this is going back to the 90s. Do you guys remember Rob Stauber? Does that name say
LA
anything
Kings.
To you? As
LA Kings,
LA Kings, and he. And I mean, he certainly wasn't a star or anything. I mean, he was barely stuck around the NHL very long, but he was with the LA Kings, and he broke out a pair of pads that had a design on them. It was a hand of cards, right? You know, the LA Kings, it was probably four Kings, something like that. And I remember seeing that and going, like, this is going to be the new thing. We've seen what these goalies, they love their masks. This was, you know, in the era we'd seen Brian Hayward and all these guys, and you're like, this is going to be the next thing. And it just never caught on. And I'm surprised. I mean, you see some of the individuality with the colors and all that. But I mean, when you see these goalies going crazy over what's going to be on the side of the mask, and you've got these gigantic canvases, I'm surprised that we don't see more of that individuality show through there. And it feels like the sort of thing that somebody's going to do it at some point, and then everyone will follow along.
There have been a couple, like Hank Lundqvist had the Statue of Liberty on his pads.
Yep.
He had that, like, not crazy like design, but some images, some graphics on there. Robin Lehner had one here in Vegas where it was like two knights with swords going towards each other in the middle, like almost like they're having like a sword fight, I remember. It's interesting because like Bauer came out with the technology to basically like digiprint, I think is what they call it. It's basically they can print whatever you want on the pads. And on the amateur side of things, a lot more players do that. Like the kids growing up will have their logo of their team on their pads rather than just trying to match the colors. It's interesting how not only have the pads become more customized in the NHL, but at the amateur level over the last 10 years, it's amazing how many more almost every goalie you see has custom pads that matches their kids, that match their team that they're playing with that season. They've got the colors, they've got the logos, they've got all of it. It is a massive industry of just, and the thing is, you're not worried about with the kid, you're not worried about, well, what team's he going to play on next year? He's going to be too tall for those pads next year anyways. You're getting new pads next year regardless. So you might as well get the ones with the team on.
That is my favorite thing is when a goalie gets traded mid-season.
Yes.
And because they can't, you know, Lord forbid they try to break in some new pads or anything different. So you get like these, the one that always sticks with me is Tim Thomas, just sitting there in his Florida Panthers with his little Dallas Stars pads, just couldn't care less. It looked awful, but you know what? That's what he wanted.
Jonathan Quick, he's lucky that the Kings like color scheme isn't that different from the Golden Knights. Yep. It's black and silver instead of black and gold. But he did even have gold tape put on his pads while he was waiting for his, because he's got his new set now. But while he was waiting, he had them, the equipment trainers put like gold strips on his Kings pads so that they would look a little more Vegas-y.
If you're going to single-handedly ruin the entertainment value of hockey, at least look good while you're doing it.
They do.
That's all we can ask of you.
There we go. Hey, we'll leave it there. This was a lot of fun just chatting pads and goalie style with you, Jesse. Thanks for doing this, and we'll get you back next Thursday on the pod.
Yeah, thanks for letting me geek out on gear, guys. I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Jesse.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, that was great with Jesse Granger. Let's open up the mailbag as we always do on the Thursday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. You can reach us via email, theathletichockeyshow@gmail.com, or a voicemail, 845-445-8459. That is exactly what Chris in New Jersey did. So Chris in New Jersey has a thought here as it pertains to players dropping the gloves after a clean hit.
Thursday Show! I just want to talk, you keep hearing all this stuff about players having to fight after a clean hit, and I keep hearing people say, just because this guy hit you really hard and it was clean doesn't mean you have to fight, which is true, you don't have to fight, but the whole concept of protecting your guy and fighting in itself, you kind of do have to fight. I feel like that somebody on the team feels obligated to stand up for their player when they get laid out, and whether the hit is clean or not, you see your guy go flying, I'm going to bet that they might not have caught the whole play, but like players are kind of like morally obligated to do it, or maybe feel some kind of way from their teammates or from their coach. As a Devils fan here, after Nico Hischier took out Barkov's knee accidentally in that faceoff circle, there were two games where Florida relentlessly went after Nico Hischier, and nobody on the Devils did anything about it. And as a big Devils fan, I'm kind of disappointed to see everyone let all these shots go on the captain. And I'm not a big guy for fighting, but that didn't really sit well. I mean, I didn't think anybody had to do anything over the top, but I think that standing up for your guy is part of hockey, part of team culture, and why fighting is there. And it's not that far off the base for me, I feel like. Thank you.
So, there we go. This has become a great topic, and I know it's been brought up. I think Sean Gentile has talked about this and written about it, that you know, general managers have talked about. What do you do fighting after a clean hit? And I mean, first of all, do you think this is a huge problem in the game right now where fighting after a clean hit happens? Or
I mean, I don't think it's a huge problem. I wouldn't put it that high on the list of issues, but it's a problem we're talking about because it's one that has an easy solution. And the easy solution is the instigator. And look, people who've listened to this show, listened to me, read my stuff, they know I'm more old school than I think a lot of guys in terms of fighting. I don't have an issue with fights after clean hits if they're big clean hits. If you see a guy take a big run, especially at a star on your team, I don't care if it's clean or not. That's for the ref to decide. I get that there are teams out there saying, we want to send a message that you do not go for big highlight reel hits on our guys. And that there's going to be consequences if you do that. I don't have a problem with that. You know, Chris and I are maybe a bit on the same page on that. But I also don't have an issue with giving a guy an extra 2 minutes. If he skates all the way across the ice to start a fight after a hit, I don't care that they both drop the gloves at the same time. I mean, one guy comes away from the play and goes all the way over. We all know that guy is going over to fight. Give him the extra 2 minutes. And frankly, if it's, you know, if it's my team, if it's Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews or whoever that just gets laid out, I'll pay the 2 minutes to send that message. That's a fair price to me. So I don't understand why we got away from just calling the instigator. I don't have any issue with the league going back to it and saying we're going to call it a little bit more. The area where I do have a problem is, look, my star player gets caught with his head down and he gets lit up, clean or not, I'm going to respond. Sure. No issue with that. I want to see that as a fan. I want to see that as a teammate. Some of these hits we're getting fights after now. I mean, these aren't even big hits. I don't want to dismiss, act like, it's a contact sport. Obviously they're big hits in that sense, but I mean, these are hits that wouldn't even make the highlight reels. And yet we got these fights. It just feels right. Like it's an obligation now. Like it feels like, and part of it is, guys like us, we made such a big deal out of the guys who did do it. And we make such a big deal when it doesn't happen, right? You know, oh, can you believe Connor McDavid got run over? Nobody in the Oilers did anything. And we talked exactly. About it for 3 days. So it's now almost like you see these hits that are barely even anything. And it's almost like you can see the players looking around going, oh, do we have to do this? Is one of these things where we have to do it? And the guy who threw the hit is looking around going, is anybody going to come over? And then you get this fight breaks out that has like no intensity to it, nothing. It's just two guys wrestling so that they can say, okay, look, somebody did something. Those are the ones I would like to get rid of. But if it's a big hit, yeah, I don't have an issue with holding a guy accountable for making the decision to give that little extra, extra something to your meal ticket on your team.
To the emails we go, like I said, theathletichockeyshow@gmail.com. I apologize if I don't pronounce your name correctly, but this email comes in from Lila. Lila Adaman, who identifies as a queer hockey fan in the UK. Lila writes the Athletic Hockey Show saying, in the middle of all the drama and homophobia in recent hockey news, I would love it if the Athletic Hockey Show could give a little bit of a shout out to teams who are doing an outstanding job of being allies in the LGBTQIA+ community. For instance, the LA Kings Pride Night jerseys are fire. The artist herself is a queer hockey fan. The Kings players wore them without any issue. This is the model every other team should be striving for. I might be biased as an LA Kings fan, but it was a celebration so wonderful to see, and those jerseys were cool as hell. That comes in from Lila. Now, couple of things we want to talk about. First of all, obviously, we're recording this on Thursday. Wednesday evening, Mark Lazarus reporting that the Chicago Blackhawks for their Sunday game would not wear the Pride-themed jerseys as originally planned. I want to say two things. First of all, Laz wrote about this on the site, but then the latest edition of the Laz and Powers podcast is now up, and it's 45 minutes of that exact conversation. So if you'd like to hear a little bit more about that in the Chicago situation, I really encourage you to check out Laz and Powers, the episode that just dropped here on Thursday. But I do think it's important to talk about this stuff. I really do. And I spent a good chunk of the Monday show with Laz and Julian McKenzie, Sean, talking about what happened in San Jose with James Reimer. I like Lila's note here. I appreciate it. I think, you know, certain teams have done it the right way, so to speak. I don't know if you saw what Dallas did, but they, you know, they had the Pride jerseys, and JB Benn, who's their captain, did a ringside interview, and I'm blanking now on who it was with, but did a ringside interview and was asked about the importance of the players kind of showing their support on Pride night. And to paraphrase Jamie Benn, Sean, he said, you know, I read what Brian Burke said, and yep. We just want everyone to know everybody's welcome in our locker room. And I thought that, you know, when you hear Brian Burke or you listen to Brian Burke, like, that's the voice we should probably be listening to. And so to hear an NHL player say, yeah, you know what, I saw what Brian Burke had to say and it resonated with me, that was great. I really loved hearing that from a player like Jamie Benn.
Yep. And it was an important thing to hear. I thought Logan Couture was great in the aftermath of the James Reimer thing. And I love this email from this listener, because this is important. This is, you know, we in the media and again, the fans, you know, especially social media, it's all about the conflict, right? We all are like, where's the conflict that we can talk about? And so when you see something like, you know, San Jose has Pride Night and that one player who says, I'm not going to participate, that's where all the attention goes. That's who we talk about. And meanwhile, there's 19 other guys that are sending the right message. And there are all of these, you know, all these other things happening on these Pride nights that so many people put effort into and really work to make it happen. And it's got to be frustrating that, you know, you're sitting there, if you're, you know, somebody involved in San Jose's night and everybody's just talking about James Reimer, or, you know, you're the LA Kings, as this listener says, and you do it right and everything goes smoothly and you send that right message and it's a great night. And everybody just kind of shrugs because there's no conflict there. You know, we can, but, and yet when it's Chicago, suddenly, you know, we're all talking about it for 3 days. Florida Panthers tonight, you know, they just sent out a tweet as of, you know, as we're recording this Thursday morning that, you know, with their designs. You know, let's, you know, we have to cover the, you know, where the conflict comes in. We have to cover that, but we're probably overdoing it. At this point, we're probably giving way more oxygen to the Reimers and Provorovs and, you know, whoever else, and, you know, ignoring the fact that the 95% of players who are on board, who are happy to participate, who are sending that welcoming message, and all those people behind the scenes that are working hard to put these nights on, to make them happen, to make them go off as a success. And yet, you know, one dummy doesn't want to be part of it, and he gets all the attention. It's a good reminder that, you know, for all the talk of controversy and, you know, who's doing this and who's going to dunk on who, the message has really been much more unified than you would think based on how, you know, frankly, people like us have been covering it.
You know, and just to wrap up a thought on this, Eric Carlson was asked, I think it was our Daniel Nugent Bowman who asked, Eric Carlson in Edmonton about James Reimer and the fallout on Pride Night. Here's what Eric Carlson told Daniel. He said, quote, about Pride Night, quote, it was great. It's a good thing. We're in a position where we have a lot of focus on us. A lot of people are watching us. To be able to use our platform for certain things is a great opportunity to try and bring in knowledge and help other people. We live in a free world. Everybody has their own decisions to make. I made mine. I'm happy about that. Everybody else on the Sharks did the same. I can't speak for anybody else. And, you know, I tend to agree with Eric. I like the fact that he said to be able to use our platform for certain things is great, and to bring in knowledge and help people. I love what the San Jose Sharks did, Sean, on game night, which is in lieu of tweeting out the score and the game and, you know, Sharks going to a power play. They used their Twitter feed to share important context and information about this topic,
yep,
about Pride Night, about all of these issues that people in the LGBTQIA plus community are facing. And I like the way San Jose handled it. I like the way Dallas handled it. And I, just to go back to Lila's original point, I like that there are some teams. There are some bright lights. It's not all dark. There are some bright lights.
Not at all. And I mean, that's a great quote that you just had from Eric Carlson. There you go. There's one of the biggest stars in all of the NHL. You know, one of the most recognizable players. Guy's going to win the Norris Trophy. Let's give at least as much attention to his message as we give to a backup goalie, who have their own views.
Nathan in Boston writes into the show. We were talking a little bit earlier about the Panthers and the Islanders maybe sneaking in as a wild card team. Nathan says, Panthers Islanders are on the playoff bubble. These are two teams that made noticeable coaching changes in the offseason. My question to you guys is this. If neither of them made a coaching change in the offseason, do you think that they're comfortably in a playoff spot and not in the bubble? Do you think either one of them would actually be a top-tier Stanley Cup contender? What do you think these teams would look like if they had their previous coaches? Thanks so much for the answers. Love the podcast. Great distraction when I have to go for a run. It makes the pain slightly less noticeable. That's from Nathan in Boston. That's what we're striving for.
I think we just got a new tagline for the podcast.
Making your life slightly less painful.
Making the pain slightly, boy, it's a fascinating what if. And look, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We don't know, you know, what the dynamic is in a dressing room, you know, how the practices are, all of this stuff. I think Barry Trotz is one of the best coaches in the NHL. And I think just about any team would be better with him. But let's also remember, you know, Lane Lambert was the assistant there. You know, it wasn't like they did a radical change. It did sound at the time like maybe there were some voices in that Islanders room that were ready to move on from Barry Trotz. So, you know, maybe that was the right way to do it, to keep the, you know, some of the continuity, but to get a new voice in there. And look, the Islanders, you know, at the very least, you look at the Islanders, they're better than they were last year. So it's hard to say, hey, coaching change was a disaster, because, you know, they have improved from what last year was. Not at the same level that they were the first few years under Barry Trotz, but they've been better. Florida, I mean, it feels like we've talked it to death now. It at the very least, I think it's fair to say that the first half was a rocky transition to Paul Maurice. And you know, there were other things. They made the huge trade in the offseason. It wasn't just Paul Maurice coming in. But you look at where they're at record-wise compared to last year, it's tough to say that coaching change worked especially well. Maybe it gets there. You know, we're seeing the second half surge from them, and who knows what happens in the playoffs. But yeah, I don't think I would have an issue saying if the Panthers stick with Andrew Brunette, that they're probably comfortably in the playoffs right now, and maybe not chasing it the way they are under Paul Maurice.
Yeah, no, that's a good way of putting it. And boy, the Panthers team is so fascinating to me that they're still in the mix after having some speed wobbles. But yeah, you're right. The Andrew Brunette thing was crazy that they walked away from him. But yeah, we'll see how this plays out. Okay, real quick, I got to read this email from Jed, because Jed leads off the email by saying, I just wanted to say that Sean McAdoo is by far the smartest writer in hockey.
Hell yeah.
So let's just Hell start yeah, with Jed. That as the premise.
Eat it, Mendez.
Come on. Who is Jed? We I want some info on that's, Jed.
Jed's, that's my cousin. That's cousin Jed. I don't know. It just Jed is maybe speaking up. I feel like there's a silent majority out there. And I don't even know what's in the rest of his email, but we're going to read it. So again,
you just want
to get your
it.
Email just, read. You know what to do.
Just wanted to say, Sean McAdoo, by far the smartest writer in hockey. Okay.
Yeah.
This is what Jed went on to say. I was listening to your discussion about the draft lottery and tanking. I believe the only real way to do away with tanking is get rid of the draft altogether. I think it could work combined with the salary cap. Big market teams simply wouldn't be able to outspend the other teams. All the teams would be incentivized to be as good as possible, because then it would make the destination for the young players a little bit better. I don't think the draft is fair in general. It handcuffs good teams by penalizing them for just being good. It forces the incoming potential star players to play for the worst teams in the league. I would create a system where teams, guys are basically free agents when they come out of junior hockey. They can go to the place where they believe they have the best chance of excelling. It would create a whole new level of free agency. That's from Jed, whose name could also be Eric Lindros, because that's exactly what Eric Lindros tried to do back in the day, right?
It could be like Connor Bedard. Who knows? I mean, geez, imagine you're Connor Bedard and you're sitting there going, you know, lottery night, Chicago or Arizona? Huge media market with a huge fan base where I'm going to instantly be a star and have endorsements and all that stuff. Or Arizona and I'm playing at Mullet Arena. Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of people feel this way. I've seen this pitch a lot. I've never really gotten on board with it just because it feels so unrealistic. It feel like I tend not to hitch my wagon to things I feel like will never happen. But yeah, I mean, you can make certainly a really strong ethical argument that taking teenagers and just assigning them to teams with them having no choice, no option, and saying this team owns you for at least the next 7 or 8 years is not the right way to do it. I know the counter argument is always, well, you know, hey, if you do it this way, great. All the top prospects go to Toronto, they go to Chicago, they go to New York, a handful of other teams. Ottawa never gets anyone. Winnipeg never gets anyone. Arizona, Columbus, they never get anyone. I'm not convinced that that's true. I mean, certainly, you know, we see a very, very limited version of this when it comes to signing undrafted college free agents. And Ottawa, at the very least, has often been an attractive destination for those types of free agents because they offer opportunity and development and all that. We just saw the biggest free agent in the NHL sign with Columbus. So, I mean, who knows? But I think what it really gets down to, and we had a bunch of emails from readers this week with different things that you could do with the draft, up to and including getting rid of it entirely. A lot of fans really seem bothered by tanking. I think what it comes down to is philosophically, there's two camps. There are fans out there who, while they may hate tanking, they say, look, the draft has to give the top picks to the worst teams. Not necessarily one-to-one, not necessarily that the first overall pick has to go to the 32nd place team every year, but it's got to be a close relationship because that's how those teams get better. That's how you make sure that bad teams don't stay bad forever. That's how you give their fans something to hope for. And then you have the other camp that says that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. And if you're in that camp, then that opens up a whole new world to different ways of doing things. We had, you know, people saying different ways to do the lottery. Does it have to not even be a weighted lottery? Do you give all the non-playoff teams the same chance? Do you give all the teams the same chance? You had the NBA wheel idea. You've got get rid of the draft, do the draft as an auction instead of with picks. There's a million different ways you can do it as long as you, if you're willing to drop that idea that it's just got to be the worst teams get rewarded with the best picks. So it's sort of a case of where do you stand on that? If you insist that the worst of the worst teams need to get the best picks, I'm not sure that the system we have isn't close to as good as you can get, with the exception being that, as everyone knows, I love the gold plan idea because I think that's the one that gets rid of the tanking and yet still gives the advantage to those bad teams. But short of that, this might be the best we can do.
Let's put a bow on this Thursday pod with This Week in Hockey History. I'm going to take our listeners back to this week in 1964, where Sean Eddie Johnston of the Boston Bruins becomes the last goalie in NHL history to play every single minute in every single game for his team in the course of a full regular season. It was a 70-game season back then. Eddie Johnston, Sean played all 4,200 minutes for the Boston Bruins in 1963-64. Interesting though. Okay. So I was looking up his season. First of all, the Bruins only won 18 games that year. So imagine they win 18 out of 70 games, and they're like, that's our guy every night.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like he was just crushing it out there. No, for sure.
But what's interesting is I looked up his season. He finished 10th in the Hart Trophy balloting that year. I'm thinking that has to be the lowest win percentage ever or the worst statistical line ever for somebody who finished top 10 in MVP voting. Guy, 18 wins, 40 losses. But look, he had a respectable 914 save percentage, which in fact was the best of his entire career. Mm-hmm. But that's wild, hey? Like, he plays every, like, wouldn't you love to, like, how did they not have another option? Like, who, like, they just didn't have a backup goalie? Like, isn't that crazy?
I mean, back then, the backup goalies were rarely used. And, you know, I'd be willing to bet if you went and looked, you'd probably see there were at least a few other teams that maybe went into the season intending not to have a backup, intending not to use a backup, but guys get hurt. Occasionally a guy will get pulled. Occasionally guys will get injured during the game, that sort of thing. But a lot of teams didn't use backups for a very long time. Now, I do got to catch you on this, though. Two things. First of all, Eddie Johnston, I know some people are probably out there going like, that name sounds familiar. Is that the same guy who was the GM in Pittsburgh, Carolina, the Ron Francis trade, all this stuff? Yeah, same guy. So that's fun. But you said the worst numbers to finish in the top 10 in the NHL. I'm going to hit you with some different numbers, okay?
Okay.
Tell me what you think of this. It's another goaltender, 66 games played, 12 wins, a league leading 47 losses and 7 ties. Led the league in goals allowed. And posted a 321 goals against, but back then that was no good. Worst numbers, you would agree, than Eddie Johnston, yeah. I think. All right. That is a guy by the name of Al Rollins, played for the Chicago Blackhawks, 1954 season. Al Rollins won the Hart Trophy that year. Al Rollins was the NHL MVP with 12 wins.
What?
And leading the league in losses and leading the league in goals against. And the year before, when he had played the whole season, played every minute, and again led the league in goals against, he finished second. The 1950s were a little bit different, but this was clearly a case where this was the sympathy vote. This was guys saying, yeah, you want to talk about value? This team stinks. They are hanging this guy out to dry every night. It's amazing that he hasn't packed up his gear and quit. We're going to give him some Hart Trophy votes. And Al Rollins, to this day, one of the very, very few guys to ever win an MVP and not be in the Hall of Fame. Not surprisingly, when you look at his numbers, he won an MVP while leading the league in losses and goals against.
So I'm looking at the voting for the year that Al Rollins won the Hart Trophy. Mm-hmm. Hockey Reference has the breakdown of the voting. He received 50 first place votes. Red Kelly finished second with 40. Like, this thing is like, this is wild to me. How on earth?
The three guys who finished behind Al Rollins, Red Kelly, Rocket Richard, you may have heard of, and this kid in Detroit, Gordie Howe. Three pretty good players. Gordie Howe had 81 points that year in a 70-game season. It was just the, clearly the thinking here was, hey, what's more valuable than the goaltender who is, I mean, geez, the Blackhawks that were so bad that year, the puck was probably in their end for 90% of every game. So, I mean, I guess he was the busiest guy in the NHL for sure. But it's fascinating. He finished second in 53, wins it in 54, never gets another Hart Trophy vote again the rest of his career. You almost wonder if it's almost like the voters were like, oh, wait a second. Like, we're trying to send the guy some love. We didn't want him to win the award. He did, and they backed off, and that was it. But definitely the strangest MVP season in the history of the NHL, for sure.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that's a great place to leave it. That's a head-scratcher to me. We'll leave it there. That is the end of this Thursday edition of The Athletic Hockey Show. As always, email us your questions, theathletichockeyshow@gmail.com, a voicemail at 845-445-8444. $59. And right now you get a one-year subscription to The Athletic for $1 a month for 12 months when you visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.